Welcome, everybody, to the Klamath Tribes podcast. Today, we have the chairman in the studio. He is 1 month into his new job as he was sworn in May 13th, William E. Ray Jr. Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak and be with everyone.
So 1 month under your belt, how does it feel?
A lot of learning, a lot of issues, and a very hectic schedule.
As expected, summertime's pretty busy. We have a lot going on in the tribes. Housing is one of the leading things that we've been working on. When you took the position, did you have anything in mind that you thought were priorities?
The biggest things that I wanted to press home on is our culture and making sure that we do whatever we need to preserve it and to enhance it, and then also learn it.
And how do we accomplish that goal?
There's a variety of ways, I believe, as one of them is to always learn from our elders, and that transfer of information from word of mouth is the most powerful. And then, of course, our existing stories and languages are very important to the transfer of that, and then actually doing that. Being a traditional practitioner, food gatherer myself, it's important that we all do those things all the time.
You're an elder yourself. How old are you?
I'm in my mid-60s.
So you bring a lot of culture of knowledge to the tribes. How will you be involved with that?
I'm involved with my culture every day. And that starts with praying with Creator first thing in the morning and doing those things that are spiritually important to me as a Indian person, and then always living my life according to Creator's will and letting Him lead and guide my path. And it's always done me well, served me well, and those are all from what my parents and my grandparents instilled in me.
This is a very important time for the tribes. A lot of money's flowing in for the first time in a while, millions of dollars. How do we make sure that money goes to the right places and spent on the right things?
Accountability, transparency is the most important part of, I believe, to have people informed about all the money, all the projects that we're doing on every level. So I believe that accountability and making sure we have good audits and that we're using the dollars that we are receiving from all these grants and where we're getting the biggest bang for our buck, especially in the housing, because it costs so much to build nowadays. So we need to make sure that whatever we decide to build, it's going to be not only built well, but also has years that will be used for a long, long time for us.
The Miletus Hotel is elders' housing that just got built. Are you happy with what you saw?
I am. I believe that between the former director of housing and diversified contractors, I believe that the building will be a long-term use for our elders.
Food gathering. Can you go into a little more detail on that and how you'd like to see that implemented more with the tribes?
Well, the first thing is that I believe that our habitats need to be much more healthier to have that diversity of plants. So we need to protect those habitats for us to be able to exercise those food gathering things, which is all part of our culture. So if we don't have that, and I look at it as a grocery store out there, out on our land, so it's important that we have the habitats to be able to sustain our ancient ways that our elders and our ancestors taught us how to live off of our lands.
A lot of that has to do with restoration, restoring the land to its original state and condition. That's a big part of what we're doing as well.
Indeed. And we have to be smart about that. There's a balance. We have to have make sure our objectives are clear when we're doing any kind of resource restoration. And it has to be to the benefit, whether it's our fisheries and our water, our watersheds, or our land in the forest. It has to be for those objectives to support our original rights and our habitats to support our cultures.
And the Klamath tribes are the stewards of the land in the Klamath Basin, it seems, more so than anybody.
Well, I believe that's always been the case and always will be since we, archaeologically, the history goes back 20,000 years, and we know as Klamath, Modoc, and the Uskin, we've been here forever. So here again, we have a lot of knowledge that the non-Indian society could benefit, but not always. They don't always listen to us.
How do we make them listen to us?
I think it starts with all of us being as advocates in our own ways, and then listening to our people from the whether it's in the form of the general counsel or myself listening to tribal members one-on-one. It's important that we listen to those people that have using the lands, that are traditional practitioner, food gatherers, to know here's what things are important to us and what we're seeing we're losing.
You come from a science background, don't you?
I have a science degree in anthropology, cultural anthropology, social sciences.
How did you incorporate that into your life, and what have you done with it?
Well, I had a couple elders that were influencing me when I was younger. Besides my mom and dad and my elders, there was a person that was very special who passed, hard for me to talk about, but he was an important part of my life and was able to get me into the U.S. Forest Service. And then I wanted to be a cultural anthropologist so I could save we have left of our areas, our sacred areas, and decided to take that up at the University of Oregon. And then they gave me a cooperative education agreement, and then I was able to graduate and then have a job waiting for me when I graduated.
What was that job?
It was my first job was the assistant forest archaeologist for the Wyoming National Forest.
Oh. Well, with that background, what are your highlights, or not your highlights, but maybe your focus for the anthropological side of things?
Well, it's always protection, because we're trying to, my job was always wanting to save all those sacred areas, those sites, those areas that were all important to the tribes to make sure that they didn't get disturbed, whether it was from logging, road building, fire. Because some fire isn't good for some of our sites. I have some adverse effects to them.
How do we protect them today, and what do we do with them?
So the protection is that there's a couple of things that I could talk about, but here again, it's all up to the people that are using them. Like if we're out praying, none of us want to be able to see the land burnt or logged over, because we want to have a more of a natural setting. The visual aesthetics, the overall setting is important when you're out there praying. And we have a lot of places where our people prayed. So it's important that we have those settings that we can have some form of solace and connection to our Creator.
You spoke briefly to the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission when they visited last week. What would you like to see from the state side for habitat protection? The mule deer was one of their focal points of decline. They've been monitoring it and have a plan for that. Deer is one of our first foods here at the Klamath Tribes. What did you come out of that meeting understanding?
Well, hopefully I helped them with a reality check. A reality from our standpoint that things are not good. Our muleys are in dire need of some major changes, whether it's from reducing the numbers of tags or whether it's the habitat that they're trying to survive in. There's just needs a lot of restoration out there, in my opinion, to not to constantly log it or burn it and do all these activities because we have so much going on out there right now. So a lot of changes that's not healthy for the mule deer. And then, of course, the fisheries are in serious peril. So there isn't one resource, as I mentioned in that meeting last Friday with the Fish and Wildlife Commission, that isn't in decline. And so the question is, are you better off now or when we had it?
And the answer is?
1961, I believe that the answer is affirmative. When we had it, when it was reservation, it was all plentiful. Because we had 10,000 acres of Wokus, and we had millions of our mullet. And there was thousands and thousands of deer where you'd have to wait to let 200-300 head go by and count the shooter bucks when I was growing up. So here again, that has all changed drastically. And how do we get back there? It's going to be a major effort. But the first thing is that as a tribes, we need to decide on a course of action to get our land back and restore it so we can put it back to where it once was before all this mess happened from termination.
Getting land back, that's the biggie. Right now we're purchasing land. Where are we at?
So we have an opportunity, as the general counsel made a motion to form the Long Bell Track Committee to look into that, to see if there's an opportunity to work with Green Diamond to try to get that 60,000 acres. So we should be looking at all those options and not foreclosing any option to getting a larger piece back. Sure, it's great that we're doing these small tracks and trying to get residential homes for our people, but the large tracks is what we really need to try to hone in on and see if we can do something to get it under our name.
Used to be a reservation quite large. I mean, in the original land of the Klamath tribes went from Cradle Lake all the way down to Tui Lake and up to more north and east and west. How much of that land do you think is reasonable to get back?
Well, I mean, the original peak-to-peak treaty of 1864, that was approximately 2 million acres or more. And that was what was guaranteed to us after we ceded away all those millions of acres of land. So that should be our goal.
2 million.
The peak-to-peak treaty.
Is that really feasible?
Well, it's a good goal. And we should strive for any opportunity that we can get some of these large blocks back, especially the private land holdings.
It's really one of the more tragic land losses in tribal history. I don't know how much the public really knows about it, understands it, appreciates the loss that the tribe experienced of this land. And I don't know how do you rectify it? You know, how do you go back in time and say, this was wrong, make it right?
Well, I believe that the first thing, of course, and this is nothing new to us as the tribes here, is education, education, education. We're always going to have a certain segment in the majority of the non-Indian world that's going to be anti-Indian. That's just the given of our country. But there's a certain segment that would like to see change also, and they understand the wrongs, and we got to point those wrongs out because all this land grab that whittled the lands down from the peak-to-peak treaty of 1864 to what we had in 1954 when termination happened is a vast difference of from 2 million to a little over almost 900,000 acres. Follow me? So the issue is allowing us to seek those partners out that are open-minded and want to collaborate with us to see our side of the fence.
It seems that the tribe has more influence and strength in political decisions, what goes on in the basin. The state, federal agencies really are starting to hear our voices. This is a little off track, but it's going to come around here. The Boston Celtics won the NBA championship, and I was watching sports talk shows. And one of the sports talk shows was talking about the Seminoles in Florida and how influential they are in sports down there, and how casino and gambling and money. And they established this, they're going to control like the money and betting that goes on throughout the state. And they said, you know, the Seminoles, nobody messes with them. They really got their stuff together down there. And they are very profitable. Their investments are sound. They have a strong voice in politics. Nothing happens there without their say in that part of the region of Florida. When can the Klamath tribes get to that point of influence and profit?
Well, I think that's a good question for all of us to decide on a course of action economically. Being a treaty tribe helps us a bunch, that our treaty rights survive termination. So that's big. And then all the court cases since we were our rights were re-recognized under court, and then our water court cases that we won and the battles, that all now paying dividends for our tribe as far as laying out our rights that we still have. The big thing right now is how do we get some of our majority of our land back being able to purchase that back, which is the main dilemma for us, is financing, buying large chunks of land back. How do we go about doing that? And I believe that the Seminoles have a good model that we could definitely use economically, because they are a powerful might. Once you have that money on your side, there isn't anything you can't do in this world of the United States, because that's what makes everything kind of turn, is that money. How do we get it? We need to diverse our businesses. And and one of the things that I'm going to advocate for is to increase our, look at our casino to see if we want to renovate it or even build a new one, and see if we can do that. And then the other thing, when I was the chair of the Economic Development Corporation in the late, from 2008 to 2012, one of the things that we looked at was a manufacturing. Let's build something. You know, there's a lot of things, products that are made over in China and other places. There isn't any reason why we couldn't attract a Fortune 500 company to build something for them in our local area and provide some real meaningful jobs for our people.
Are there some tribes around the Northwest that you say, hey, that's a blueprint we could follow? And have you talked to them at all? And do you think we should be reaching out?
I do. There are several tribes, especially you could go to Muckleshoot, you could go to Tulalip, you could go to a number of other tribes that are, really have made their mark economically, that we could have it as a roadmap to our success. And we just need to have the right direction from our general counsel, I believe, on what we want to do and set out a plan.
Yeah, making a profit, that hasn't really been on the agenda. That takes a lot of change and change in thinking, as you mentioned, how you approach it economically. Casinos seem to be the easy route, right? You build a beautiful casino and attracts attention, makes a lot of money. But there are other things, too, as you mentioned. So what kind of time frame would it take for the tribe to go from where we are to that profitability and self-sustaining financial situation?
Well, we have to have a goal. When I was on EDC, as I mentioned earlier, there shouldn't be any reason why we couldn't be anywhere from a $200 million to a $300 million up to $500 million grossing economics if Wow. we got our act together.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, and here again, that's how those tribes make money.
And that's how they pay dividends.
Exactly. And buy things.
Yeah, I mean, those profits translate into taking care of the tribal members. There are some that, you know, make $1 million a year. In Nevada?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Well, here again, we have to have goals. And the Klamaths and Modocs and Yuksans have always been industrious people, smart people. We just got to get all of our smarts and our talents channeled in one set of goals for economically, and we can do that, I believe. There isn't any reason, because there's a lot of tribes making $100 million on their casinos in the Northwest.
Astronomical amount of money out there that they're making.
Mm-hmm. And the big wheel that we're not taking advantage of economically is Highway 97. And we need to do more to figure that out. But we haven't improved our product. We have to improve our product down there in our resort. We have to make it a five-star resort so we can attract people off of 97. And that's going to continue to be a major artery for going in between California, Oregon, Washington, all the way up through Canada and all the way back down to Mexico. So we need to take more advantage of that, which we haven't capitalized as much as we could be doing.
It's a gold mine sitting there.
It is.
It is perfectly positioned. Crater Lake National Park attracts attention. The highway, as you mentioned, is a major route through the southern area of the state. So what do you want to do? I mean, how do we take the next step? You said making the casino a five-star resort. It's time to do it, right?
Yeah, well, it's time to put the plans, to dust off the master development plan that we had done in the early 2000s and dust it off and update it and see where we want to go with it, and I'll agree to making that happen and get the financing. Here again, if you think about it, Crater Lake National Park is the number one visitor attraction in Klamath County. We are second with our casino and our businesses. So we're at a place there at the junction between the Highway 62 and 97 to be a perfect spot to be able to do some work and have growth.
I mean, traffic also degrades habitat and the environment, but there's got to be a balance there. It can be done.
Oh, definitely. Well, here again, one of the issues that we're pushing hard on since my arrival is we brought this to the attention of Senator Merkley, where we use some of the federal highway dollars to do some fencing, big game fencing along 97. And already the Oregon Department of Transportation already has information on how many accidents are caused on Highway 97 from big game being collisions with the automobile traffic. So, and those of you that have seen that fencing along, they just did some in that recent upgrade between Lapine and Crescent on 97 and then right outside of Sun River. And it's effective. It works. And that way it would cut down on the safety for everyone traveling Highway 97 and help our big game.
Yeah. They have other ways to alleviate that is underground passages, corridors for the animals over the highway. You know, fencing is one solution, but you can't fence off the corridors of the animals. They're migrant, you know, they move herds.
You bet. So part of that would be besides fencing, just like they have in those areas that I just mentioned, they have those underpasses. So for them to travel to and from without having to do anything, so they could do it mainly underground for the passages between the highway and the other both sides of it.
On the other side of the coin, there's a controversial issue of establishing a landfill in the marsh and the refuge, the wetland refuge, wildlife refuge here. That's higher on your radar as well, right? For us to get active to prevent that?
It is. And we have taken major steps to that even before I arrived. The former chairman, he did a lot of good work in that area to notify the county commissioners and the county planning department that we was going to stand for that. And we're reaching out to build a more of a larger coalition of people that are also opposed to that. And so, yeah, we're going to do everything possible, including having another meeting with the county commissioners and planning department, see if they can just nix it.
The governor's coming down at the end of July. It's a big thing. It's going to be touring the area, work we've done, the health and family services. She wants to look at Melita's, and she's going to be over at the Wood River. What do you hope to gain with her visit and maybe have a chance to be able to have that one-on-one with her?
Well, one of the things that I believe that, excuse me, that can, the governor of Kotek can help us is, especially with this, working on this collaboration of trying to get this large tract of land back, there isn't any reason why the state of Oregon can't be a partner in that to help us try to move that forward and help us with that. The other thing is that we need to have a candid discussion about our resources, how they have dwindled, and what the state can do to help us, not only in terms of us being on our rivers without being harassed by the non-Indian public, but also they could look at reducing the number of tags that they're issuing in these critical areas that we have to exercise our rights on. So there's a variety of things that I believe that we can press on with and then continue with some of her agenda topics, which are homelessness and people at risk in all ages. And that's where some of that money came from to do the elders project there at Melita's, was through her legislative agenda when she became governor.
I don't know when the last time a governor came down to visit the tribes. Do you remember?
I don't.
It's a big deal.
It
it's
is.
Nice to see.
Yeah, it is. All day she's going to be here and staying at the Sleep Inn the night before, so it'll be nice.
That's excellent progress in the political side of things.
It is.
And the senators here and the representatives of the state have been also stepping up, I think, for the tribes. Any you want to mention in particular?
Well, I think that's the good work that we've laid. You know, before I became in my new role as chair, give my kudos to the people before me that had done all the work, the previous councils and so forth, because they laid the groundwork for the Senator Merkley's and some of these other representatives that have been more supportive of our activities. So we just need to nurture more of that, and hopefully when we have the new county commissioner seated, that we'll start in with educating them and where our goals are compared to where the county's goals are, and also the new sheriff and the recently appointed DA, especially when it comes to the MMIP issue.
Well, you are the chairman now. It's been something you mentioned when they swore you in May 13th. It was a very emotional swearing in for you and your family. You're on an interim basis until the election in February, which you said you will run again.
Well, if people would like to have me, I'll definitely consider the offer for sure.
What does it mean to you to be the chairman?
A very humbling honor and very passionate job. I just very humbled and feel so honored to be the Klamath Modocs and Yahooskans chair.
Very good. Our first conversation with the chairman, William E. Ray Jr. Thank you for joining me today on the Klamath Tribes podcast.
Sup ketcha.